Welcome to the Embodying Aware Parenting Podcast.
Exploring what parenting feels like from the inside out with Sarah Devoy and Vicky Plomer. Welcome, Sarah Lou, to this Embodying Aware Parenting Podcast.
Thank you.
I'd just love to hear a little bit more about your story and, in a way, what attracted you to aware parenting. I mean, we can back right up and, yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Love to tell you. Thank you for having me, first of all. I'd love to tell you because I accidentally found aware parenting. It was completely accidental. I was at a family, what are those things called where you go and camp and have lots of, I've forgotten the word, where you camp and there's various things on. Anyway, there was various talks and festivals. Things. A festival, thank you. We were at a festival. It was a family-focused festival, and there was all these different talks and activities on. And I'd gone through the program, and I found this talk that I thought, oh, I really want to go to that talk. Can't even remember what it was now. And I went along, and I'd got the time wrong. And I went along, and I was like, this isn't the talk I went to. And I'd accidentally gone to a talk that Rebecca Sheik was doing, who at the time, this was many years ago, when my first child was one, she was giving a talk about aware parenting. It wasn't the talk I'd thought I was going to, but I sat at the back waiting for the talk that I thought was going to come on, and so I started listening, and it was unbelievable. I had this amazing experience. Everything she was saying, I had almost like my mouth open going, goodness me, this is everything she was saying was just resonating, everything. And there were some things that I just had never come across, in particular the listening to children's feelings and crying and raging being a wonderful thing. And then also that was like kind of, whoa, I've never heard anyone speaking like this before. And the other thing, she went through lots of different types of attachment play and gave quite a few different examples. And again, I was like, wow, I've never thought of that. So it was really wonderful because it was completely accidental. Mm-hmm. And one of those wow moments. And I signed, and then just after her talk came the talks I thought I was going to, and I listened to that, and I remember thinking, goodness, this isn't even very interesting, and actually I don't agree with hardly any of this. So it was one of those, wow, that's so amazing that I'd accidentally gone to this talk. And I signed up to her email list, and then from then on I was getting kind of weekly, monthly emails from her, and yeah, that was the beginning for me.
Yeah, so at that point in your life, yeah, just so that people can, maybe our listeners can have a full rounded kind of feeling about you and your life, you just had one child at that stage who was just one. So
I had one child, yeah, he was about one and a half. So I was very early in my parenting journey, yeah. I'd kind of barely stepped my foot into it, if that, like, looking back.
So lucky to have found aware parenting so early.
Really, like, absolutely. And also, like, I think my first one, I've had very easy baby years as well. So I'd had a very easy year and a half with this delightful little baby who, I think my natural parenting style is attachment parenting. I hadn't really thought much about parenting before I was a parent, not kind of properly. I just kind of followed my instincts, and it was all attachment. My instinct was attachment parenting. So I basically had attachment parented him for a year and a half, and it had been easy, and I hadn't really come up with any kind of triggers or any challenges or anything then. He hadn't even, it was easy. So I came across aware parenting before I hit any challenges or triggers. Yeah. So it was actually wonderful for me because when I did, I already had some info, which is great. I think I could have had a very different time if I hadn't
known
that.
I think our listeners, Sarah Lou, would love to hear about that kind of changeover point. You know, it sounds ambrosial, this gorgeous little person who was going with the flow and you were all in tune, but then something else happened. So I think we'd all be on the edge of our seats wanting to hear, like, what happened when things got a little bit challenging? What was that like?
Yeah. So it was a very distinct point. So then what happened, and it really follows my aware parenting journey. So So I'd heard about this aware parenting, and I was like, yes, 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 this is so wonderful to have some other people that I really align to and that really resonates with me. Because I did find, even with just attachment parenting, I found it was quite different. Like, I was co-sleeping and I was breastfeeding for quite a long time, and it was quite in contrast to most other people I knew, not everyone, but most other people. My job is very, I'm a doctor and it's very traditional, and all my colleagues are very traditional parenters. And I was very much not the norm. So that was really helpful. But I didn't really, it was kind of nice rather than necessary. And then I have four children now. My second child I had when my first child was three. So I've had 3 years of really not much challenge at all. And then my second child was born very suddenly. I had a placental abruption at 36 weeks, so a month early, and it was dramatic and scary. And it was happened when I had my three-year-old with me. Me and my three-year-old he was in his swimming class, actually. Okay. So we were ambulanced, zoomed to hospital with me and my three-year-old. And then the baby was born very, very quickly. And early, enough time for my husband to come and my mum to come and take my three-year-old away. So he wasn't there when he was born. But so my second baby was born a month early and was whisked pretty much straight away to NICU and was there for 10 days. So at that point, I hadn't, it was a month early, so I hadn't really prepared my three-year-old. Yeah. He'd never spent a night away from me at that time. I hadn't prepared him for the birth because I thought, oh, I've got another month, so we'll prepare him. I was actually just about to start the preparation. So he wasn't prepared at all. And then all of a sudden, I was away from him for 10 days, having never spent a night away. He was used to me working in the daytime, 3 days a week, but he wasn't used to being away at nighttime. So all of a sudden, he was away from me for 10 days. Mm-hmm. I had a baby in NICU for 10 days who was attached to lots of things. And so he was in NICU. That finished, and the baby was fine after 10 days, and we took him home after 10 days, and he hadn't really woken up. The baby hadn't woken up for 10 days. He was either induced sleep or sleeping for 10 days.
Yes.
We came home, and he hadn't really made a noise. We got home with this tiny little baby who was teeny tiny, and he started crying pretty much as we got home. I think he was well enough. He wasn't fighting for his life anymore. He was well enough. He was alive. He was home. Yeah. He was in my arms, having not been for 10 days. And he just started crying and didn't stop for 4 months.
Wow.
So he cried. He did actually sleep really well. He slept in the daytime and at nighttime really well, and he fed really well. Like, feeding and sleep were no problem. But when he was awake, he was screaming nonstop, like properly belting it out nonstop. So I had a tiny baby who was screaming, and I had a three-year-old who was absolutely traumatized from being away from me for 10 days, like completely traumatized, totally life-shatteringly, in pieces from that.
Sarah Lou,
yes, from being
I'm away. Wondering if I could wave at you and we could just take a pause with all of this, because it's a massive story for me to listen to, let alone kind of put myself in your shoes, you know. So I wondered, is that okay with you if we just took a breath?
Yeah.
And just like, wow. I mean, you've been on a major roller coaster.
Yeah, it was.
And even to reflect in the moment, like right now for you, like is it possible for you to feel into, oh my goodness, you know, even those moments you were perhaps aware of aware parenting and attempting to embody aware parenting. And, you know, it would be amazing for us listeners to really sort of tune into it, like what a lot to navigate, you know, what a lot of conflicted feelings and all of that you have to
live through,
you know.
Yeah. It was,
Where does that take you? Where does that take you even now in this moment as you kind of catch up with the whirlwind? Like, what's that like just to pause?
You know, actually, right now, my most overwhelming feeling is it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. Because I was on maternity leave, so I had no other agenda other than my two children, my newborn baby and my three-year-old. There was nothing else that was important to me in my life other than those two at that time. So what was amazing was that I'd been kind of aware parenting had been in the background for me since discovering it, and I'd been reading the emails that Rebecca would send out every so often, and I'd actually, in preparation for having a second, I thought I'm going to just read all the books because I'd got them because I thought, wow, this is amazing, and I'd kind of dipped in and out. I thought I'm going to just read them so that I know, because I thought when I've got another baby, I'm not going to have time to read. So not in the kind of preceding 6 months, I'd read all the books. So it was really fresh in my mind, and particularly the baby one. I did it actively. And so then when I had this baby that was crying, because my three-year-old, he hardly ever cried. He had me and my husband, who just had one kid. We were completely attending to his needs. And he had a very idyllic life with two devoted parents, and we both worked part-time, so he was with one or the other of us all the time. So the only difficult thing in his life up to that point had been the 10 days that I was suddenly away. He hadn't had kind of anything big, so he you know, we hadn't had to listen to big feelings ever, really, because there weren't a lot. Well, actually, that's not true. I did also breastfeed him. It was his major control pattern, which I hadn't been aware of. So I think any tears that there were, probably I just breastfed to them. That's another story. But so I had this baby who was crying, and it clicked for me. I'd read all about this crying business. I'm in aware parenting, and I was like, this is it. Like, this is, I've got this baby who's just had this big trauma. I've barely touched him for 10 days. So I felt really prepared for it, and I felt like this is what I need to do. I know what's going on. I already felt really comfortable with breastfeeding and general baby care. I'd had a first one that was very easy for me, so I felt like I knew I could meet all his needs. I knew how to meet the baby's needs. I did all of that. He slept well, he fed well, and then he just screamed, and so I would just hold him, and it was mostly the evenings because he slept a lot in the day. So I'd be with my three-year-old in the daytimes when he was sleeping, and he was just on me. He actually slept in his little basket really happily in the daytime as well. So I put him down in the daytime, and he was really happy. And nighttime, he slept next to me. Otherwise, he was on me. And then so I was with my three-year-old in the day. And then in the evenings, I'd just be with the baby screaming for hours and hours. Yes. And I just hold him. And it was actually beautiful. I felt really settled because I felt like he was just going, it was so awful and I wasn't doing that way. Uh-huh. And I felt really connected to him. And I think partly because I'd just read all the books and partly because I felt comfortable with babies anyway. Mm. And it felt wonderful. I felt I don't have any other agenda. I can just be here. And we had actually planned to go away with some friends when he was 2 months old, and we cancelled that because I thought, I want to be with my baby, not there's no point me going away and then just sitting with a baby who I'm listening to. So, it was actually great.
It sounds amazing how
my husband.
I was just going to say, Sarah Lou, it's amazing how it seems like the two of them sort of accommodated each other, you know what I mean? Gave space. By the day, as I understand it, you're second born, and then giving space, saying, "Oh, my time is later on in the day." They're scheduling themselves in a way for their times of release, and it sounds like the aware parenting gave you a real backbone, like, you know, having read those books.
Absolutely,
you knew what those tears were about, because I think that's a lot of the questions we'd hear from other parents, isn't it? Like, how do you know that they're crying? And, you know, you as a doctor as well have that other level. Well, I have checked the temperature. I have checked, you know, for anything else. And this isn't actually a physiological problem. It's an emotional response to something, you know. And,
it was very clear to me. I think so. I think it was a combination of all of those things. But it was, it was almost like I hadn't really experienced it with crying ever before with anyone, but then having read about it and then experiencing it, it was just like, this is it. And that's all I need to do. I just need to be here and listening and holding him. Yeah.
Curious. When your second one started releasing, sorry to cut in there, but when your second one started releasing, how did that impact your first one's response? Was there a little bit more emotion there?
It was interesting actually, because he had always been a bit, he is definitely of the more sensitive nature, my first and my fourth. And he was very empathic from a very young age and still is. So if another child was crying, he would be really unconcerned and almost upset himself. He'd not experienced it a lot other than in friends or whatever. So then having a sibling who was crying a lot, I think actually quite quickly that kind of stabilized him. He kind of became more used to it. And I think probably I haven't really thought about this much before, but looking back, it was probably because I was very comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. Then he was able to be very comfortable with it. Mm. But that was quite a change for him, because he went from being quite uncomfortable with other children crying to then becoming very used to it and being comfortable with it. And now he's very comfortable with it. He'll happily, with my fourth baby, who's a baby now, and he's the oldest, he'll happily go to her when she's crying and look after her and be with her. Wow. Yeah.
Wow. So how does that make you feel when you see that happening?
Oh, well, to be honest, mostly I'm so busy. Now, it's almost just like a passing, oh, great, I don't have to think about that. Let me move on to the next thing.
I think that's quite a triumph I have three children of my own, but, you know, to really fully engage with aware parenting. You know, as you say, it's a doddle with one and maybe two, but once you're kind of sprouting into threes and fours, that the support network is definitely needed, isn't it? So whether it's the young ones acknowledging or a partner or, you know, other members of the family or whatever, it's really, really needed, you know? Yeah.
So, but just to finish that story.
Yeah.
Basically he cried nonstop it was almost bang on 4 months. And then over a very short period of time, over a few days, he went from crying nonstop to smiling nonstop. It happened really suddenly. It was almost like he was like, okay, I'm done. I'm done. It's fine. I'm done. And then he turned into one of the most smiley babies. And it used to make me laugh frequently, because we'd be out and about and I had so many comments going, wow, your baby's such a smiley, happy baby. It's like, oh, I didn't see him for the first 1 month. and then as he got older, and still now, actually, he's five now, he has always been so free with his emotions. He's been so easily, he's upset about something and he's screaming his head off and then he's fine. Or he's angry and he's raging around on the floor and then he's great. Like, it's a real kind of big release and then totally fine. So then it's been such a joy to watch him, actually.
So you've really offered him life skills. No, it's an amazing story. So you've really offered him life skills, because, you know, as an aware parenting instructor and parent myself, you know, often people would say, oh, you're really going to spoil that child. You know, if you're listening to all those feelings all the time, you know, you're definitely going to make them all wishy-washy. And that hasn't been your experience at all. It's been totally...
Yeah, not at all, no. Yeah. Actually, there's one other part to the story, which I think is very linked. So from a very young age, from as young as he was able to do it, probably one-ish, his main... night, I don't know what term to use it, but the thing that he really loves doing is having skin to skin. So from a young age, he would come often first thing in the morning and last thing at night. In fact, even now, every night he goes to bed skin to skin, lying on my tummy. So he pulls up my top, pulls up his top, and says, he calls it tummy. I want some tummy, Mom. And I'm sure that's because he didn't have it for those 10 days. So from a really young age, that's what he wants. He wants that skin to skin. And even now, that's his tummy. So I love that he intuitively knows that. I knew that from a really young age. He never had that for the first 10 days, and that's what he's had loads of it. And my others are not all that bothered. Like, they kind of like, they kind of copy him a little bit because they're like, oh, that looks nice. But he's like, no, this is what I need.
That is very affirming, isn't it? Totally affirming, because I find, you know, with the games or the approaches where we're parenting, it's really allowing that child to come up with the solution because that instinct.
Yeah.
Not allowing that instinct to be, you know, to be used, isn't it? And to follow it. So that's like a gorgeous example. And probably
just their innate knowing.
Yes, that is extraordinary. Yeah. So yeah, I'm just curious, like, over the years, obviously you've got four kind of beings firing on all cylinders from time to time. It would be really helpful for our listeners, I feel, to hear some experiences when maybe you weren't quite the Zen mummy that, you know, you appear to be. Times when you might have been triggered and how coming back into your body may have helped, or just what helped you, really. That would be key to hear that.
Oh, well, I have many, many experiences and examples of when I have not been in any way Zen or connected, or so my default is definitely to go authoritarian if I'm not if I'm not kind of settled and triggered. If I'm triggered, then so what's the question? How do I bring myself back into connection?
Yeah, basically how. I mean, I suppose if you gave us a little story of when you were out on a limb and how you may have come back, would be great.
I can give you my current one at the moment. So I think it evolves over time, and I think I probably get, I feel like I'm kind of trending towards noticing it a bit quicker and getting in place better mechanisms to help me. My current one is my oldest, actually. He's really, one of the things I love about him is he's absolutely, his barometer for what feels okay for him is super heightened, not heightened, but on it. He's like, he is, if something doesn't feel good to him, he is straight away, that doesn't feel good for me. So if I am feeling unsettled and speaking to him or one of the other kids in a way that is not feeling good for him, he is straight away, hey mum, he said to me the other day, don't speak to my brother like that. Uh-huh. He's like a real barometer for me. So more recently I said to him, anytime you feel like I'm speaking to you or doing something that's not feeling good, please feel free to tell me. And so at the moment, this is one of the things, if he's saying that, and then what I do is, oh yeah, that was, you know, I could have spoken in a really different way there. So then I will either, my second child, he's like, mum, you need a breather. I will say, okay, I need a breather. So I either we live on a tiny little boat. It's really tiny and it's open plan. So it's not like I can't go into another room, but I can just step outside. So I might say, okay, I need a breather. And step outside and literally just step outside and have a few breaths. The other thing I might do is, that's one thing. And the other thing that I sometimes need to do is just shake my body. And so I quite often do a full body, okay, I just need to shake it out, and do like with like a big body shake and a big that kind of really like and then often what the kids will join in. So we'll do, okay, we need to just shake this out. So we'll do that.
It's kind of a win-win. Because they're kind of pointing the buttons at you, and then you're kind of turning it back into an experience for everyone, which is fantastic. That's fantastic. Because it's like we can only do it together, can't we? In a way, we can suddenly remember that, oh my gosh, I'm out on a limb, and how can I bring myself back to a kind of a centered kind of place, you know? But in terms of, like, that's a lot, you know, like a lot of people, even the idea of having four kids is like completely off their radar.
It is a lot.
and I'm guessing they're quite close together in stages as well.
Well, they're 8, 5, 3, and 10 months.
Yeah, you see, you're being very, I can do that. But I think for a lot of people, that's quite close. And that's quite a lot, you know. And then you're also giving us the story that you live in quite close proximity as well.
Yeah.
Without a place where people can freely run around outside. So that's...
No, we've got a big garden. Our mooring, okay. We're on a mooring. So we have a big garden and a small indoor space so they can run outside.
Yeah. Yeah. But not into the water.
No, they have it. I can't just, so they can be outside, but only with my focus on them. So I can't just let them out and not pay attention to them.
Yeah.
Because there's actually two rivers, front and back of our garden. So, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a fair amount to consider. So, I mean, could you tell us a little bit more, Sarah Lou, how you build capacity in your daily life? Like, what do you do? Like, I mean, I think for listeners listening in, they'd be saying, my God, is she, you know, what planet is she on? How is she juggling all of those things? And, you know, are going to work from time to time. You know, I'm not sure if you're back at work at this point, but, you know, just anyway, keeping your finger in there and, you know, stretching into the sort of professional space as well. So,
yeah.
Goodness. And putting things on the table at some point. I mean, woo. And going shopping at some point or fishing for fish.
My husband does the shopping. That's one thing I don't do ever. Yeah. He does all the shopping. So this is something I thought about a lot by necessity because I have had to find ways to manage with 4 children in a small space. I'm not back at work yet. I don't go back till my youngest is 14 months, so I've got a few more months yet, which is helpful. And definitely while I've had long maternity leaves for everyone, which is really helpful for when they're little. So by the time I do go back, they're old enough for it to be much more manageable. And then I only work 3 days. But I think actually that's part of the strategy. So this is something I've thought about a lot. So my number one, which is like the basis of my whole life, is sleep. I don't know if this is everyone or just me, but for me, sleep has such a major impact on me. Absolutely massive. If I'm sleep deprived, I can go like a night or maybe two of not amazing sleep, but any more than that, my whole life just collapses. Like I feel like everything is a struggle. And if I'm well slept, which mostly I have good nights, I feel like I can take on the whole world. Like it's such a contrast for me. It goes from I literally can't do anything to I can do anything in the whole world if I am full of sleep. So that's like feels like my absolute basis and something I have increasingly prioritize as more and more and more is like my baseline priority in my life. That's number one. And then I have a bunch of, which I've developed over the years, a bunch of things that nourish me. And a lot of those are integrated into my day. So my main hobby for my life is running. I am a runner. Mm-hmm. So I actually, since my most recent baby's been born, it's not a major part of my life, but normally I haven't put it back in since she's been born, but normally I get up and go for a run every morning, and that's like my first nourishment of the day, and everything about it is wonderful. Yeah. And then I have other little things of nourishing in the day, which often I do with the kids. Either that's nourishing for both of us, like play-based stuff, which I love almost as much as they do, and outside. I love being outside, so we're outside a lot. Mm. Which is great for me and them. And then other things that are just me in the evenings, I often listen to books whilst I'm doing various chores, listen to books and listen to podcasts, which is something I really love. Mm-hmm. But those are the kind of the little things, other than the sleep. The things that actually I have found that I really need and actually make my life possible, and this is still an ongoing journey for me, is getting really, really clear on, one, my needs, and two, my boundaries. And these two things for me have been absolutely life-changing. Mm-hmm. And something that have been big lessons for me, that I have gone from not realizing that I have any needs, not knowing that I have any needs whatsoever, like being completely unaware of any needs, and not having any awareness of my boundaries whatsoever. In some ways, not always, but in parenting ways, mm-hmm. and relationship ways, not even knowing what that was, to then gradually over the years becoming more and more clear about that. And that for me is what makes anything possible, and looking after being with four children all day.
Let's stay with that, because I feel that's really, really core, isn't it? So, that feeling of boundaries, and I guess, embodying that, we talk about these things and people blah, blah, blah. Even that word kind of triggers me a little bit, because, we talk about boundaries and the importance of it. But the day to day actuality of it, I mean, right the way down to that primary thing of sleep that you spoke about. A lot of people be saying, well, how does she do that? Like sleeping, and she's on this boat and everyone's crawling for her attention and lying on her belly or, needing all sorts of different things that she seems very open to, and then listening to the feelings. And then where does sleep, how do you draw a line, a loving limit around that? If somebody needs something else, how do you, unless you've got some sort of wing somewhere where you can go. I mean, a lot of parents would end up having an attic or another space that they'd have to go to get that sleep. So it's astounding that you manage to sleep in that environment.
Well, we're all six of us are in one bed. We've got a really big super king bed and mm-hmm. kind of extension to it. We're all six of us in one bed, and me and my husband sleep really well. Both of us are really good sleepers, and we're both really sleep fine with multiple limbs on top of us. So I feel like from lots of my friends and family that I don't know, lots of people just can't sleep with other people touching them. And that's something that is easy for me. It just is. And all my kids sleep really, they all sleep for nearly 12 hours a night, even my 8-year-old, maybe 11 now, actually, 10 and a half, 11. They're all big sleepers. And once they're asleep, they don't wake up. So the sleep bits, actually, the only challenge for me with the sleep is leaving the chores. Because I really love getting everything done in the evening and then waking up with everything done. I love that. But sometimes if I've not been able to get lots done in the day, I think, okay, either I stay up and do the washing up, or I go to bed, or I get my husband to do it.
So that's actually a beautiful example. Get him to do it. Yeah, sure. Where possible. But that's a beautiful kind of, that is a quite an embodied limit as well, isn't it? A real sense of, yes, I could turn myself into a dish rag and, complete that task and then be moany and groany the next day, or I could actually just, dropping something. Yeah. So that sense of dropping. Yeah. It sounds like an important aspect as well, because, I mean, let's face it, it's you can do things with one maybe at a pinch, but when you've got four, there are things that you just have to drop,
Yeah, absolutely. So the other really big, I guess, lesson for me is slowing everything down. So we started home educating our children when my fourth was born, because my oldest had been at school for nearly 5 years then, and he hated it with a passion and had been we'd been talking about it for a long time. Anyway, we finally decided that we would do it, and since that journey I have found more and more, so just over the last 6 months or so, slowing everything down just almost feels essential. So the kid, and it's been led by the kids more than me, actually. And I it's more like I've realized that rushing around and doing lots of activities and going from one thing to the next and just means then you don't have time for actually the things that I want to be doing, which is connection and listening to the feelings when I need to and getting enough sleep. And what they want to do is just hang out on the sofa and read some stories. And if one of them needs a big rage, then they can do that and run around outside in our garden. They don't need to go any further. So they've really pushed that with me. And as they've done it, I've gone, oh, wow, this is actually amazing. They don't actually need anything else. I mean, occasionally they'll be like, oh, let's go to this group today. And then we'll go to a group, but it doesn't happen very often. Mostly we're at home having a really gentle life without lots of, we do have, because we live on the river, they've all got paddle boards and pedal boats, and they've got lots of activities, and they've got sandcastle and not sandcastle, a sand pit and trampoline. So they've got loads of stuff where we are. So, they just having a, not packing in lots of stuff, then gives time for listening to feelings and eating and sleeping and reading books and doing just a few things that are really nourishing for them and me.
And harmonizing together as a unit, because I mean it strikes me as well now that you have four that you're outnumbered anyway, you and your partner. You know, so if you're being, you know, if they're voting with their feet to stay because they feel satisfied and they get met in that way, and that's building that foundation, isn't it? So even for people listening, they might say, well, I haven't got quite that lifestyle or that setup, but there's lots of key aspects there. So, I mean, in terms of sort of making that into something that others could relate to, you know, I'm hearing about, you know, the fact that just acknowledging that their needs may well be met within the family space, that, you know, you can get them the food they love and they can move their bodies in a certain way and find ways to release. I mean, and then also you're not fried. I mean, the idea of trying to get four into a car and try and organize feeds around that and all the different aspects, nappies and God knows what, it's a hell of a lot for a parent, isn't it? So stepping back into the simpler way, slowing down.
I think, and having the systems, I think the simple, not packing in loads. And then for the things that we are doing, it's just having the systems to make it all easeful, I think. So, we don't have a car. We've got a cargo bike, actually. And it's, so if we do go somewhere, it's actually really easy because they love it. I love it. And they just all tumble in and we go. So that's really easy. And having the systems for the babies, nappies and baby wearing and all that's, you know, I suppose once you've got your systems, it feels quite, I have that question a lot, like, how do you manage with four? And I think, I didn't go from naught to four. It's one extra each time, and you have your systems for one, and then you add in the second, and you get your systems, and you add in the third, and then the fourth, and the systems are there, I think. Mm-hmm. And then in the context of not packing in loads, then it seems to work. I find when we do pack in loads, also we're away at the moment with family, then it goes a bit, like, we have to then settle afterwards when we get back. Packing in loads of stuff, and it's a bit overwhelming and lots.
That'll be an interesting coming back. So, but you're in a way prepared for that. You're kind of aware of that. Finally, is there something that you'd like to say to listeners, you know, some kind of, I don't know, little favorite ways of bringing yourself back into connection? I mean, even when you go home, for example, you know, you've gone out on a limb and maybe there's been a bit of ice cream or a bit of different kind of foods from normal or whatever it is. And then perhaps you have a system, do you, to come back home or eat things that will work?
Yeah, I mean, only to not be, well, we don't have much in our lives anyway, but actively not have anything planned so that there's time for them to sleep whenever they need to sleep and sit. My oldest just likes to read in a quiet spot so he can read for as long as he wants to read. And just so there's time and space for them to have any big feelings that they need to have. So that would be my number one. I think the only thing I haven't said about me, the other major thing that I have actually is listening partners, which I only introduced into my life not that long ago, like maybe a year or so, maybe 2 years ago. And that has made such a big difference to me and my my ability to get back into connection and to shift stuff as well. So having that for me and making a space for that in my life has had a major impact, I would say. It's having that space to speak stuff out and have it listened to.
Could you tell us, just for those people who may not have heard of the concept of a listening partner before, how you set that up, and is that somebody, how did you come to know that person? And
so I used the, I forget her name, but there's a Facebook group that someone set up, I've forgotten their name now, but it's Aware Parenting Listening Partners Facebook group, and it's specifically for finding a listening partner. So I put a post on that. So actually, how I do it a bit differently to how most people do a listening partnership, actually, because I've got four kids. I don't have any moment in the day or the week that I can say at this time I will be free to have a phone call and have a face-to-face or ear-to-ear listening time. I just, this doesn't work for me at all because there's too much to juggle. So instead, so I put a post on that saying I can leave voice notes. I can listen to voice notes at some point when it fits into my life, and I can leave voice notes at some point when it happens to fit in. And I actually had three people respond. So I have three listening partners who that works for them as well. So we do it with voice notes. So whenever I need to, I will. And because I have three, I can send lots of anytime I need to without overwhelming one person. I can leave a voice note and they listen whenever it suits them. And sometimes it might be ages for all of us, that if we're going through a busy phase, and other times it might be that same day. And then they can also leave voice messages and I listen whenever it works. So that for me works really, really well. Just being able to speak it out and knowing that someone's going to be listening. Sometimes even just the speaking out feels just, it shifts it out of my body. It feels like sometimes I can feel it. It's just gone. Oh, it's gone.
And are you, with the dynamic with your partner, would they kind of give a voice note in response to that, or is it more like I've heard you, I get it? Would they speak to that, or would they tend to speak to their own next process?
No, almost always we'll have a response to each other as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that often seems, I find there's often a lot of synchronicity actually with my listening partners, that we're either kind of having similar things coming up with our kids, or I don't know. That's not so. I mean, often it is. Goodness, I've had a really similar experience. I really can hear you on that one because, yeah. So it's kind of sometimes just intermingled, a response and a share.
But it feels as we're speaking, Sarah Lou, that kind of moves mountains for you as well, doesn't it?
Really? Like, yeah. Really.
You know, when you're engaged in this intensity, and then you can feel held in a way, knowing that someone's listening.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've increasingly focused on that with my partner as well. I think the thing that links to that is actually the revealing aspect of it. I think probably more related to my partner than listening partners, but which again has been absolutely key for me when something's coming up, not kind of both for my kids and my partner, not just keeping it in, but actually saying if it goes along with boundaries, but actually just revealing that in the moment, if it's almost always in the moment, feels great to be actually, this is what's going on for me right now, in with as much emotion that is needed, particularly for my partner, and often with my kids as well. That has been a major factor for me. Yeah, and it's an ongoing process, but just that really, actually, this is what's happening for me right now.
Yeah.
And recognizing it for myself and then communicating it and really feeling it and shifting it. It's been like a major journey for me.
It sounds wonderful. They're just sort of owning it as yours, so that, you know, even if your children are sort of marinating in whatever emotions are passing through, you know, they know that that's your stuff. They know that that's your trigger.
Yeah, exactly.
You just got a phone call from the bank or whatever it was, and it's not connected with them.
Yeah, so, exactly.
That's truly beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah Lou. So if there's something else that's bubbling up that you'd like to share, go for it. But I feel it's been an amazing experience to have an insight into your life, and, you know, to float on that boat with you for a little while and mess around the sandpit. It's been really rewarding to feel you've drawn us right into your world, and it's been very satisfying to hear how aware parenting, you know, you're doing your very best to embody that in a moment to moment. So it's, you know, I'm in awe. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Well, it's a delight to be chatting to you.
Great. So we look forward to hearing from you another time. And thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening. Aware parenting has been life-changing for both of our families, and we'd love to hear your reflections and answer your questions.
Contact Vicky and Sarah on the links below. We both offer a free introductory consultation. We'd love to hear from you. Let's discover the joy of parenting together.